Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Day number 6 of the 12 Days of Podcasts, our third annual run of podcasts for 12 days straight, leading up to Christmas. This year, Jeff, is a test of our memory. Let's see who was on the podcast.
Okay, so it was Guapdad 4000. Then we had Kodak Black, Denzel Curry. Day 4 was... Two Jews and Two Black Dudes Review the Movies. That was Airplane.
Right.
Then Amina Toussaint.
Yes, and today?
Today is Kazim Famuyide.
So for anybody who is coming over from Kaz's podcast, Flagrant 2, the whole asshole army, who doesn't know who we are.
Welcome.
Nice to have you. I'm sure you're very interested in hearing the real Kaz, the real life Kaz, the behind the scenes to who this guy who's been yelling about the Knicks this entire time is. And you get a lot of that today, and it's a great podcast. But if you don't know who we are It's The Real. We've been around for a long time. Our podcast has been around for a long time. And we've had everyone on from like Cardi B to Swiss Beatz to Action Bronson to behind-the-scenes people to sports people to just interesting and fun conversations on a weekly basis. And what we do at the end of every year is just flood the market. We do episodes all December long in an effort to raise awareness about what we have going on here, and this is it. So we have one thing that we want to ask you.
The asshole army.
We want to ask the asshole army to make fun of Kaz's outfits. And also spread the word about this podcast to your friends, families, fans, fanatics, whoever. Just let them know that we have something cool going on over here, and you could do that on Twitter, on Instagram, on iTunes by leaving a review or a comment or whatever. We appreciate any and all interactions. Even the people who hit us up and they're like, yo, you're doing dope shit. I really appreciate all the work that you put in. It all means a lot to us.
So let's not fuck it up. Today on the podcast, we have Kaz. Kaz, who we've known for a cool decade now. He went to school in our hometown of Purchase, New York, and we've known him ever since he was an intern over at The Source. 2 weeks later, he was basically running the place, and I'm really excited to get into his story because he's such a good guy, and he has so many great stories. And
by the way, Jeff,
yeah,
Deucepalooza is coming up. You can get your tickets at deucepalooza.com. Kaz makes a big announcement when we talk about Deucepalooza in this episode. Look forward to that. Jeff, when do you want to get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. the executor of the Jackson Family Estate, a.k.a. Mike Will Made It.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Get In Loser, We're Going Shopping, a.k.a. Ride or Die Bitch.
Hey, it's Kaz, a.k.a. Black Guy, a.k.a. I cut my hair and I wish it grew back, a.k.a. Your boy. It's good.
Yes, it's your favorite podcast to waste time with. It's The Real. Bra, 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 bra,
yes. Why did that feel so much like Usual Suspects? We were just looking around the room just being like, I don't know.
This is Kaz, Mug, East Coast Kaz.
Yes.
What's happening? Welcome back.
Oh, it's been a while, right? God damn.
Do the Delta stewardesses know you by now?
By now, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Like the people at the fucking
Welcome back, Mr. Kaz.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, it's beautiful.
Kaz, what are you known for?
They just see me sadly dragging a bag every Sunday. Like, you're back again? I'm like, yes, bitch, I am.
Take me to Stamford, the city that works.
Kaz, God, straight up, at its biggest, mm-hmm. were you recognized more for throwing your hat off of the roof after the Knicks draft, or as James Harden?
Be honest. I would say the hat thing, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, like, there was a while where fucking every... Dee Zamero did Bill Simmons' podcast.
Yeah.
And they talked about me fucking throwing the hat off the goddamn balcony at Translation. And then
I cut my hair. And that was after which draft?
This is when we drafted Porzingis.
Right. who is also known as...
The Godzingis.
Yeah, exactly. And you were looking after him just yesterday on Twitter.
This is fact.
Asking him how he's doing.
And the fucked up shit is, right? Like, I was mad because I wanted him to draft Emmanuel Mudiay, who we ended up getting anyway. And it's just like, okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not bad or good. He's just like, oh, he's all right.
What if James Harden plays for the Knicks next year?
You know, it would be very awkward for me to walk around for a while. It's weird because, like, it's half of the reason why I cut my hair, too.
Really?
Yeah.
You got peer pressured into it?
It was too much. The pressure of
being us tweeting at you.
That and like the disappointment of people anytime they run up to you, it's like, oh. After a while, that just takes a toll on you.
Which Duce Palooza founding member do you get confused for the most? Just like, because they're like, oh, I know you, the water gun guy. You're.
Oh, gosh. It's pretty distinct, but I do get confused for Rory all the time.
They call you Rory?
No, they don't.
You're Rory. Don't. Totally no one lie. Has ever.
Get me in. Yeah. Get me in. I do have a question about Duce Palooza because we wanted to do a Duce Palooza podcast last year.
Yes, yes.
Where it was going to be.
Duce Palooza is this Saturday, December 22nd at Hammerstein Ballroom.
Yeah.
You can get tickets, DuceePalooza.com. Mr. C. Clark at DJ.
No, that's big, though.
That is big.
Thank you. Thank you. We got a big artist coming, too, but hopefully they'll know by the time this.
Yeah.
James Harden. Yeah. But so we were going to do a Duce Palooza cast.
Yes.
And it was going to be every single member of Duce Palooza, all 47 of you.
Yes.
And we were going to go through and be like, okay, who is the best person to room with on the road and who is the worst person to room with on the road? And we couldn't get it to happen because
it was a split decision amongst all of you.
As soon as one person said,
"Listen, that question alone just fractured a group chat." It was like, "What?
We just wanted to know who was late, who leaves like hair in the drain, who snores. Like, we just wanted to know that. We weren't asking all like the salacious shit.
No, yeah, no, but no. It was like everybody was like, yes, 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 and then there was one no, and then it was like, oh wait, no, 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 no.
So speak for yourself. Yeah. Are you a good roommate when you're on the road?
No, I'm not a good roommate at all. I'm probably one of the worst people to room with.
Do you show up late and drunk and cause a scene? And
well, I don't show up late or drunk. Sometimes, like for the room. Sorry. So here's the thing, right? Like when we had roommates, and most of us had our own rooms. But if you're rooming with someone, and in my single more salacious days, like sometimes you either go home with someone that you either brought there or is hanging out with or whatever, usually make plans before them,
or
you bring somebody back to said hotel room. And if you didn't have somebody like that, you know what I mean, you would have to work out with your roommate, hey, I'm heading back to the hotel after this. So as far as that goes, I never really was the best at just not at leaving, because I'm very washed. So a lot of the times, like, I'll just beat you back to the hotel room and I'll be asleep. And, after the party, I'm not really trying to do anything but just fucking go to sleep. And then, you know, you hear a knock on the door. I'm just like, God damn it.
I'm going to pretend I'm asleep.
Yeah, either pretend I'm asleep or I'm just like, bro, I'm here, bro. This is just what's happening. But
all right,
like Jersey Shore. Yeah,
exactly.
Let's get right to the very beginning. And you know, we ask everyone who comes on here where you're originally from, but we know where you're originally from.
Yes.
You're from our favorite island.
Yes, the island Staten of Staten.
Beautiful Staten Island.
Beautiful sunny borough of parks.
Yes. What is the most Staten Island thing about you in 2018?
Oh, God. The most Staten Island thing about me is I eat mad pasta. That is my go-to. Like, if it's there, you probably can't mess it up for me. Like, I'll eat any of it type of pasta. Like,
is that a problem for you who works out all the time?
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. I've gotten better with my pasta choices. Whole wheat, some quinoa type of pasta, you know what I'm saying?
Fake pasta?
Yeah, the fake, not as delicious pasta.
Sure,
but it's,
right. Who cares about taste anymore, right? Just eat cardboard.
Exactly. Like, it's just not as delicious or fun, but, it's a...
But who cares? You'll live longer.
You'll live longer. And I drink a lot of wine, so I'm like an Italian mother.
Exactly.
In many ways.
What is the best thing about Staten Island? What's the worst thing about Staten Island? I would say worst thing is probably the racism or location.
Yeah, the racism. Racism's pretty
not
fucking
great.
Rampant.
Not great.
Out there. And you know what's fucked up about it? Like, I didn't really realize it until like I moved out of Staten Island. And
that's you mean the whole island to them?
No? Yeah.
Wait, you were just used to it?
I was just in a way, yeah. Like, not like used to it in the sense where it was like somebody's like, hey, nigger, and he's just like, oh, okay, I'm a nigger. No, it's not that. I was used to it in a sense where it's like, it was just real veiled shit that I just never didn't really catch on to until like I left that borough. Hmm. And I was just like, it's a weird, okay, maybe there are racists, or maybe that's just how things are here and they don't really know better, because it's as isolated of a place you can live at, man. Like people who usually born
been.
There.
Oh no, yeah. I've been once. Yeah.
Like people kind of come and go there, but like people that are born there fucking stay there. They live there. They die there. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of people, it's rare that motherfuckers just leave Staten Island, but. Yeah, like it's a weird type of veiled racism that happens there, but it was, you know, it's you look at voter polls, and once I got into politics and realized that's a borough full of firefighters and police officers, and then you just see how they vote, and we're the only fucking Trump borough in all of New York.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah, that's the racism. Yes, right. But yeah.
And on the flip side.
On the flip side. Great fucking pizza. The pizza's delicious. Like, you know, it is probably the best place to get a nice like family pie. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to Jimmy Max. Fuck with Jimmy Max the long way. But yeah, phenomenal pizza though.
Growing up there, how big is your family when you were a kid?
Oh gosh, growing up there, it wasn't terribly big, but I had a lot of cousins.
Mm-hmm. Who also on the island or?
No, they were like Far Rockaway.
Okay.
But, you know, you go and visit them a lot.
Right.
But it was just me and my brother, my mom and my aunt and my cousin, Aziza.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much us, you know what I mean? That was pretty much a lot of our like immediate family in Staten Island. And yeah, like I would have like cousins and like aunties and uncles that lived on Staten Island, but like my closest like my dad's brother's kids, cousins.
Mm-hmm. Far Rock.
We're in Far Rockaway, sorry. I had a great sandwich across the street. And I was like trying to come up. But
when did you start to play sports?
Oh gosh, I was playing sports right when I was 6 years old. I played since like kindergarten, and I was always like a little bit taller than everyone, so my mom made me play basketball. She didn't let me play football, even though like every coach under the sun was like, oh, let this kid play football.
And did you want to play football?
Nah, not really.
Did
like,
you want CTE?
No, exactly. Like, the funny thing is like I would play football like in the street or like with other, you know, in the backyard and stuff, and like coaches will see me and be like, oh man, like, you know, he should go play.
Yeah, what's
know.
His 40 time?
Like shit like that. But I just loved basketball. Like I loved fucking like Jordan and the Knicks and all this other shit. And I was like, I wanted to do that. So
wait, so you didn't feel torn wearing Jordans as a Knicks fan? Because I've never worn Jordans.
Yeah, well, I couldn't afford them. You know what I mean? I couldn't also afford same. Them when I was very young. Yeah. But, you know, when the Knicks were, like, relevant, like, I wasn't wearing, you know, Jordans. I was wearing, like, that's how long ago it was. I was wearing, like, strap shoes and shit. Like.
Did you have a hoop outside?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, man, you know what's fucking crazy? I went back to Staten Island for Thanksgiving, and, like, my brother and I, we, like, fucking not even like the house that we grew up in, there was another house like down the street where we lived on like Ada Drive, and we built a fucking hoop. Not built it, but like we had a fucking like
play school.
No, like a real like a real deal, like, you know, fill the base up with sand or water thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, we would do that, but it would always fall over, so we like dug like cement. My dad like poured cement and put the pole in there and left the hoop up. And then, like, you know, the hoop fucking fell off or whatever. But we were back there for Thanksgiving, and the pole was still standing.
No hoop.
No hoop, but the pole was still there. So we were just like, holy shit, like, my dad put that pole there for a shitty basketball hoop.
Were you guys just like a Festivus pole?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, I don't know what the fuck they do with
Were you and your brother out there, like, till all hours of the night just balling?
One-on-one?
Yes.
Yeah. Numerous fights. Numerous people we had to beat up over games. Like, We were some knuckleheads. Not super knuckleheads. We weren't super knuckleheads.
Did you have like the street ball or did you have like the indoor ball?
I had both. I didn't really start using indoor balls until I was playing like organized basketball. Yeah. I was like in third grade.
We had all like the multicolored like street ball. Like,
you bounce too hard against like the nipple on it and stuff.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Oh, man. Like the fucking gas station balls that you get that were super rubbery.
Yeah.
All that shit.
When did you get into organized sports?
Like third grade. I played at St. Adalbert's in Staten Island, and I was like in the CYO. And I was like, they had like this fucking newspaper, Staten Island Advance. And like every time I'd have a good game, like they'd put me in there and shit. And like that happened up until like eighth grade. In eighth grade, I was on this traveling basketball team called Staten Island Lightning. And we went to the AAU National Tournament.
What?
And mind you, like our team was like, we were the basketball team representing New York City. You know what I'm saying? So we had to beat like the best of the best of the city. So like, it was rare that any teams from Staten Island went like to the Nationals, and like it turned out like kids that I played with, like, you know, my guy Kyle McElarney, who went like D1 and played for Notre Dame, yep, and my guy Doug Elwell, who went D1, and like we were just like the first group of like Staten Island kids that like was really good in AAU basketball and traveling. So like we traveled there and we came in like seventh place in like the USA Nationals at our grade. And that was like seventh out of like 250 teams.
Damn.
And right then and there, that's when all these like high school recruits started like trying to pluck us for like certain high schools or whatever. And a lot of people stayed in Staten Island and like they killed over there. And I had a scout take me from Staten Island to New Jersey, where I ended up going to St. Patrick's. And St. Patrick's is like this fucking massive basketball powerhouse, yeah, still to this day. Like they've, you know, Kyrie Irving, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, you know, Shaheen Holloway, Al Harrington,
Kaz Famuyiwa,
me, yeah, Kaz. Yeah. they put a lot of people in the NBA and overseas, like, you know what I'm saying? So
what happened to you?
Yeah, I wasn't that good. I figured that just out tall, really quickly.
What were the best parts of your game?
I was athletic. Yeah. I was athletic. So I was like one of like the first kids like dunking on my team. So I was really good at everything but ball handling. Like my ball handling was like my Achilles heel. Like I could shoot the ball, I could catch and shoot, I could run and jump and dunk, and
you could dive.
I could dive. I can grab rebounds, over
box out, me, yeah,
play good defense, all that shit. Just my handle was ass. Like I could not fucking, like my crossover was sucked. Like I had one hand, I was just all right handed.
Wait, who is like, better, you or Stanley Hudson from The Office?
I was definitely better than Stanley with the fucking, yeah, the one arm shit. Ben, I didn't dribble like that. I didn't dribble like that. But you know, my left was, if you forced me left, like it was, you know, it wasn't a sure thing. But to the right, oh yeah, it's buckets all day.
So did you go out to St. Patrick's for ninth grade?
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. So from,
so all 4 years,
yeah, all through high school I was out there.
But like, okay, eighth grade to ninth grade, how do you get it in your head that you're like, all right, I'm gonna make that, what was it, a bus ride down there?
Yeah, my mom drove me every day, every morning.
How long? Yo, shouts to your and mom. Yeah, no,
yeah,
kidding.
Mom's a beast, bro. Like she drove me every morning before work.
How long?
That's cool.
7 hours.
No, it wasn't that far. It wasn't that far. It was over the Goethals Bridge in, okay, Elizabeth, New Jersey.
6 hours.
it was maybe like 30 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad. Okay,
wasn't,
yeah,
that bad, but yeah, you still have to cross that bridge and pay that toll every day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was wild. But and we had practice like early in the morning, so like sometimes we'd have to be there at like 6 a.m. and my mom would wake up with me and drop me off there to like, you know, practice with the team.
So
play.
Is that a very old gym?
They didn't even like, their gym was so terrible. We didn't even,
how
play
terrible
our
game was it?
Well, it was not terrible. it was literally like an old Catholic school. Probably an enrollment of like 150 max. You know what I'm saying? Like it was three rooms at each floor and it was one building. And we had a little fucking gym inside the high school. And, you know, but it was like this national power of a high school basketball program. Like we were sponsored by Jordan and Nike and like we had games on ESPN and all that other shit. But, you know, it was just a dump of a school,
right,
you know?
Right.
So, and we couldn't fit all of our fans in a little high school gym. So we had to play at this place called the Rexplex. Do you remember the Rexplex?
Mm-mm.
It was like this fucking...
Great name, though.
Yeah, it was great.
Into it.
It was... it's across the way from IKEA in Elizabeth.
Okay, yep.
And
well, by the way, you're not selling me on it.
I'm sorry. Well, it's closed. It's closed now.
Exit 13A, like, right?
Exit 13A. Yeah, that's where it was. Yeah, yeah. And it had like a skate park and shit. And that's how... Everybody remembered it because like Tony Hawk went there, mm-hmm, and like skated over there and shit. And when Tony Hawk pro skated was the shit, it was like, oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
He's at the IKEA.
Yeah, he's at the IKEA. But yeah, that's where, you know, that's where we played ball at. And yeah.
And who was your coach?
Kevin Boyle. Kevin Boyle is, he was at St. Patrick's for a number of years. Now he's at Montverde Academy. And Montverde is a school in Florida that fucking... You know, Ben Simmons went there, Joel Embiid, a ton of D'Angelo Russell, a ton of pro guys. So he's coached a shit ton of professional ball players.
And what did he mean to you?
Nothing much, really. Clearly, I'm here. But he was cool, man.
He didn't make you into a better human?
He did. Not so much him. The assistant coach, who's the head coach now, mm-hmm, when he left. a guy by the name of Chris Chavannes, he took over. And he was the guy who was like, you know, it was typical lean on me coach. You know what I mean? Where you can fucking people who, you know, I was a little more fortunate than people I went to school with. But, you know, some people didn't have a choice about like where they had to stay. Like they would either like stay far away or with a family member or they'd stay at his house or, you know, and he was like a father figure to a lot of us. Like, and he taught us like about being a grown man and like fucking, you know, how you carry yourself and how you talk to people and how you greet people. And like, he was very big on giving, and we'd have like a fucking, we'd do a Thanksgiving drive every fucking Thanksgiving before the season starts. Like, he didn't celebrate no holidays. All the holidays he would do, he would be like doing charitable shit. You know what I'm saying? And now he's the head coach there. And like, now he's carrying on that legacy of putting like, you know, these top, you know, players, whether they be in, you know, Division I NCAA basketball or the NBA. So, Chris Chavannes was definitely like that fucking guy for me, man.
Did you ever have the feeling like you weren't, you know, a starter, right?
Yeah.
And no. You might not have been the sixth man.
No, I mean, I played a little bit.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I was like maybe like eighth. Off the bench,
but did you have
I was a rotational guy.
No, sure, but did you have that chip on your shoulder being like, yo, I was killing it back home,
yeah.
And like, I feel like I should get more time, or I feel like I could like benefit in some form or fashion?
I'll be honest, like for a while I did, but it took me, I knew that was the reason why I went there though. I knew I was going there knowing I wasn't going to be the best guy there, but like my thought process was, if I could hang with these guys, I could hang with anybody. You know what I'm saying? And I kind of went there with the mindset of knowing like, hey, I could, if I wanted to just go to a high school and just be the man, I would just stay in Staten Island because that's what I was doing my whole
right.
life. I wanted to go challenge. And
then you could have stayed in Long Island.
Stayed in Staten Island. Yeah. Yeah. My whole idea was like, I want to go play college basketball. I want that to pay for my, you know, school, whatever. So like that was like my only real goal, you know? And I felt like if I'm playing at this team, a college coach is going to see you. A college coach is going to give you a scholarship. And I wasn't a guarantee being in Staten Island because a lot of people didn't go. Very
and
isolated.
So you were a good team player.
Very good team player, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was.
Up you off watched the bench. All the clothes.
I would retrieve the ball. Yeah. And shit. Like, you know, wash people's asses. Now, if it was, yeah, like I was definitely like not somebody. Okay, I lied. Like my freshman year, when I was playing JV, like I thought I was the man. And I was a nut, and I took a lot of shots and all that shit. But once you go to varsity, it is a whole different ball game.
Did they beat you down in practice?
Oh, yeah. Practice was harder than the games because we was blowing everybody out in the games. Like, everybody played because, like, we would be up by fucking 30 before halftime because we were just dogging everyone. And it just – the practices were, like, you really made your name because that's where the coaches would come. They would see you pretty much working out against like other D1 players, you know what I'm saying? Like in most high school schedules, you're not going to play against anybody you're going to end up playing on the next level in college. So like a lot of times they just come and watch us practice because all of us are going to play in college, you know? So practice is where you really made your name.
What was your take on beating up a like shitty team?
Oh, it was fantastic. Like, I didn't know about, like, I
you didn't know about feelings or, like,
no, like
compassion?
No, I never really played on a bad team until, like, I got to college.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
whoa. Purchase Panthers.
There you go, Purchase Panthers.
D3.
Even, yeah. like, my first go-around when I was at Dominican playing a D2, you know, that was on scholarship and like that was fun, but like that was like my life. And like I didn't know if I wanted it to be my life like that, especially when I'm like, I'm not gonna go to the NBA from fucking Dominican College, you know what I'm saying? Or
you can be like the Wayne Corbett.
Yeah, right? Like this is the guy from Hofstra or some shit like that. But yeah, like I never really played on like a bad team, so if he was blowing them out, it's like, yeah, fuck it. Let's blow them out. Let's give the guys a show. Let's fucking show.
Yeah, be like Harlem Globetrotters.
Basically, yeah. Like, for most teams, like, 85% of the teams we played was like that. The one team, and they kind of came back around, and I guess this is a funny story to share. My second-to-last high school game was on ESPN, and, you know, we had a kid by the name of Derek Character who played for the Lakers for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He was on ESPN, the magazine, a bunch of times. he was, they called him Baby Shaq, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we had another kid named Corey Fisher who went to Villanova, set a whole bunch of records,
mm-hmm.
like street ball legend in the Bronx, like complete beast. And we're playing against Oak Hill, and Oak Hill is a powerful school, but we were like, no, they're coming to Jersey, one, and two, they're playing against us. Like, we got two future NBA players on our team. Like,
so wait, they
good.
Came to the Rexplex?
They, no, actually, this is in Trenton. Oh, so, like,
beautiful Trenton.
It's beautiful Trenton, New Jersey. Yeah. It was the primetime shootout, and it was the same tournament that LeBron had played in the year before when he fucking had the whole Hummer shit happen to him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we was there the next year. And I'll never fucking forget it. It was playing on ESPN2, and they had a couple D1 guys. We were like, oh, we could take them, whatever, yada, yada, yada. And there was some skinny kid who walked up to do the jump ball. And mind you, we had a kid that was Baby Shaq. So we're like, oh, he's going to fucking kill this guy. He can't even fucking, what is he going to do in the post of this guy? He's so fucking frail. Fucking, the kid turns out to be Kevin Durant. The kid turns out to be junior year Kevin Durant. Skinny as a fucking twig. I'm thinking he's going to fucking post up on him. Is the same Kevin Durant you see in the NBA
yep.
is the same Kevin Durant I saw my senior year of high school. This motherfucker is, and mind you, it was like watching a fucking dog walking on two legs.
Yep.
Seeing somebody that tall fucking just rock people to see cross people over, hit fucking 40-foot threes
yeah.
and shit.
Like Rucker Park, yeah. Kevin. Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
like,
yeah.
what in the fuck is this? And we lost by 40 points. We got blown the fuck out on national television. And I was like, yeah, we deserve this. Like, the way we've treated people, I'm like, yeah, this is fitting.
Damn. Fitting. So by the end of high school, who are you?
By the end of high school, I still got a little bit of hoop dreams, but I was more focused on, like, I loved writing. And I loved, like, journalism, and I loved, like, the business of sports, right? So my whole thing was, I may not make it to the NBA, but I want to be able to know enough about the game that I can still be around it and, like, make money doing some part of it. So that was my goal. My goal was, hey, best case scenario, I fucking kill it on D2. I'm a Wayne Corbett. I'm one of those like unheralded guys. Like, wow, this guy, he was all right recruited out of high school, but he fucking killed it. And
yeah.
Let's give him a fucking call and go to the NBA. A worst case scenario, I get a job. Right.
Sure. And, I mean, I can think of worst case scenarios than that.
Exactly.
Like, you get herpes or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I get herpes.
You could be the Wayne Corbett of herpes.
I mean, yeah, that was the goal. So, you know, I took the scholarship for Dominican College, and I was playing ball there, and, you know, I met some of my best friends there. But it wasn't really what I expected. It was a small school, and I knew that going in, and I expected it, you know, since, like, I was coming from St. Patrick's, and that was a small school. My whole thought process was, hey, as long as we're good, the people will come, right? Mm. That wasn't really the case, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was just, you know, you have your certain college games that were exciting and fun, and it was just monotonous. And, you know, after a while, I'm just like, you know, like, you're still a freshman, so you're not playing a ton. And, you know, you're still getting used to this brand new coach. And, you know, it was hard. Like, and I was expecting it to be hard, but, like, I didn't expect it to be hard and, like,
boring. Not,
yeah, hard and boring. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just, college just exposed me to a lot of different things. And I was like, okay, yeah, the world's bigger than basketball. Because for, like, since I'm 6 years old, ball was fucking life. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, everything I did revolved around, like, hooping. So that's when I started, like, you know, really touching on, like, hey, like, I really do love, like, you know, rap magazines or, like, sports magazines and writing. And, you know, the source was still the Bible then. And, well, not then, but, like, you know, there was the still remnants of, like, you know, what that meant to work at a music magazine. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, I loved watching, like, Brown Sugar.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, man, that's a pretty cool life to live. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wanted to be in that sort of mix. And yeah, that's kind of where I was at.
Well, is it weird to not just how you see yourself, but how people see you? Because I'm sure your whole life, oh, tall kid plays
yeah.
basketball.
Yeah.
Like, I see you in a jersey. You go to St. Patrick's.
Mm-hmm.
You get a scholarship to a D2 school. You are seen as a basketball player.
Yeah.
How is that to sort of, like, be like, nah, that's not sort of my main gig anymore?
Yeah, no, it's definitely like, it's a bit of an adjustment. It's like you kind of feel like, well, you're big and black and you kind of stand out amongst most people, but you're not used to that because you play basketball. And like for a basketball player, I'm pretty average. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm used to standing around like 6'8 guys, 6'10 guys all the time. So you don't really realize how much people just look at you like, why aren't you using your heights? You know what I'm saying? Like, why aren't you, you look like an athlete. Like once I stopped playing basketball and kind of filled out more, it was like, you play football, don't you? You know what I'm saying? Like it went from that to that. And it was weird, man. It was kind of like, I didn't expect it to be, to bother me a little bit, but I think that's kind of like why I really harped on having such a wild work ethic. Cause I kind of feel like people judge me on how I look and how I present myself a lot. And like, even if you see my name, you know what I'm saying? Sure. Like my name isn't like Bob Jones, you know what I'm saying? So like, I feel like I always got to overcompensate and make sure that people aren't just looking at me like as some just big dumb jock.
So like, what was your first attempt at getting a writing job?
Okay. So, I would say it was my junior year at Purchase.
So you transferred from Dominican up to Westchester?
I transferred. Yeah. Purchase had a, you know, I was giving up the scholarship, but like I was still kind of local and, you know, it was important for like my mom be able to come and drive and watch me play if, you know, she wanted to. And, it was important to be able to, go to a school that had a reputation for journalism. When I went there, I really wanted to, get an internship because everybody's telling me, oh, you got to get an internship, you got to do this. And I went on Craigslist, I'll never forget it. I was dating a girl named Laura, and Laura was helping me like look for internships. And it was like some unnamed thing, it was like music magazine looking for such and such. Call this number or whatever fucking Craigslist ad used to say. <back. laughs> And then, you know, she helped me call it. And it turns out it's the Source magazine.
So it wasn't like, meet us at the Hilton Hotel. No. And then it was a sting.
Oh, God. No. It wasn't like...
Because that's what happened at my high school.
It wasn't like must wear furry outfit. It wasn't that kind of crazy.
That's weird. Yeah,
It's like, why do you want me to wear this? Yeah, so like she helped me find that internship, and like she dressed me for it and shit, and like I didn't really have a suit, and you know I went in there, and I think they had just came out of bankruptcy.
Wow.
So like you know they wasn't in the business of turning down free work. So I was like, wait, so like I get to come here whenever I want to and help fucking. You know, help with stories and help with this and that. I'm like, really? I'm
where
like,
were their offices?
They were downtown at this point. They were at 11 Wall Street.
So that was like the nice like glass offices.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, this was that happened afterwards. Like there was another office in the same building around the way that was just like maybe one glass office and the rest was just like, you know, old Source logos and magazines and shit like that.
What so kind of stuff were you doing?
God, I was transcribing Source Sound Lab videos. Every Source, everything from like the Source's
heyday,
like their whole visual library, whether it's the Source Sound Lab, the Source Awards, Source All Access, I had to fucking take those VHS videos, digitize that shit, put it in the VCR with another fucking TV, and fucking tag and describe every single thing. And this was like something that took literally months to do, like at least like it was like a 2.5 month job that I was doing for free.
Yo, a VCR for our people listening, it's like YouTube but like in a machine.
And like the link is like something you had to hold with your hands.
Yeah,
like,
but the description, the tags, you got that, like,
the tags were the same thing. So like so it was fucked up, and it was almost like cruel and unusual punishment. But at the same time, it was like I thought I knew a lot of hip-hop, but this was like such a crash course on like learning shit that like a lot of people don't know about. You know what I mean? Like they at one point they were the Source. Like they had access to everything and everybody. So like I'm sitting here watching like, and it's not like finished tape. It's not like edited tape. I'm talking about it's like the shit that they
raw footage,
like shit that they sent to the TV truck. So I'm sitting here just like watching like file footage of like Tupac and file footage of like Suge and Big and like Puff. and like all these legends, and I'm just
but
like,
also a lot of no names
and a shit ton of no names. A shit ton of no names that I fucking grew to love, like Lil Zane. No shots to Lil Zane.
No shots at Lil Zane, who was also like Tupac.
I think that's why it's all with Lil Zane. I was like, who's the closest thing to Tupac? Lil Zane.
That song is a banger.
Yeah, for sure.
You're having fun tonight.
Who's the first person in rap who comes through the office and you're just like, oh shit?
Oh God. Three. It was Queen Latifah, Nas, and Spike Lee.
At the same time?
At the same time. For what? It was for the 20th anniversary issue. That was my first. My second issue ever was working on that 20th anniversary issue. And that was with Queen Latifah on the cover, Nas, I think Spike Lee. I think like Nelly had the other cover. It was like Ice Cube. It was like four like generations of whatever. And
hip hop.
Yeah, that's what that but it was like four generations of hip hop, and it was crazy because like I don't know if they had just finished the shoot or they were coming in to talk about it or whatever, or they were shooting like extra video footage, but they were all just like chilling in like the little glass office, and like they came out, and like I was still in college, and like Facebook was still starting to pop off, so I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna ask for a picture with Nas. Like, I think I still have the picture. Like, I fucking went up to him and like had this cheesy fucking two finger pose. And that
middle
was like the first
up.
I mean, that's the thing though. Like, the thing that was really fun about that was that like the writers didn't see me fan out. Like, I definitely fanned out, but they liked how I handled myself around them. So they're like, oh, okay, we could like bring you along and shit like that. And they saw me like toiling away for 2 months fucking transcribing videos and shit. Yeah, so they were really cool about that. But like, that was like an amazing
oh, you got to go home and brag.
Yeah, like, dude, when you're fucking going through videos of like all your idols for like 2.5 months and like, God, why the fuck would anybody do this?
Yeah.
And then fucking Nas walks in and it's cool as shit. And you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, this is why people do this, you know?
So. Yo, I sat in the editing, when I was interning, I sat in the editing session of Kobe Bryant's music video with Tyra Banks and Lil X. And I'm there just like just overwhelmed, right? I lived off that story for like years. Oh, I was just and Tyra and X and everything. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For a Kobe Bryant music video.
And Kobe,
But
I never interned.
consider yourself lucky. You're still doing just fine.
But did you see the relationships developing to a point where you were like, yo, they'll hire me here?
No, I didn't. I thought they were just kind of using me for a while. I was kind of scared. And I tell this story all the time because, you know, I think young people should hear it. I, like, held them hostage to, like, give me a job.
Well, how so?
So, as the story goes, you know, I was starting to write for them pretty consistently as an intern. And then, you know, I did, like, the first Drake story for them, which was one story on, like, Canadian hip-hop. And then it was another story just on actors turned rappers, right? So we had, like, for the first, I think this is around, like, right before, not even before So Far Gone. Like, he was still doing, like, Little Young Money snippets and, like, Comeback Season had been out and, like, all this other shit. So, like, we had, like, a decent rapport, like, with him and, like, I think, like, T-Slack was, like, his old manager or some shit like that. And, you know, I had just did another profile on him because I was the only guy with the line to him. And, like, nobody was really checking for him that worked at the Source because, you know, it's the Source. We're looking for street. The big fish. Drake wasn't, one, Drake wasn't really their demo. Two, they were all aiming for the big fish. So, like, all the big editors were going after chasing the Jay-Z stories, the Eminem stories, the Ice Cube. Like, those
guys.
Or
even just, like, Lil Wayne. Like, it was
Lil
just
Wayne.
Like, yeah,
exactly. Like, those guys. No, who gives a fuck about a kid on the Degrassi? But I thought he was dope. So we did another story. Then after that story, I was like, yo, I'm on this committee for my college. You know what I'm saying? Like, you should come perform at our school, whatever. And he was like, yeah, sure, like, whatever. And then, you know, we had this little, but I think we paid him $8,000 to come and perform. And then as the concert's coming up, I remember they used to let me just, like, sit in on the editorial meetings just so, like, I was, like, soaking up game or whatever. And then I think Amy Andrews or Mr. Mech was like, you know, could we get anybody into that Drake show tonight in New York? Because, like, mind you, we had booked them in, like, February. You know what I mean? Like, maybe So Far Gone might have been, like, a week old. And then now it's, like, April.
And it was, like,
and now smoking it was like, hot.
Everybody had to be there. Yeah.
Yeah, like, now it's, like, the biggest, hottest ticket in the city. And it's like, oh, man, we got to get somebody in. We got to get somebody into that show. And I'm like, I actually put that show together. And, like, the whole fucking room turned around looks at me. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, man. Like, I'm going to get your footage. I get a story. Do all that shit, right?
You so, plus one?
Plus one. I'm like, whatever. It's my shit. I'm, yeah. It's purchased. That's my town, baby. Come on. I run things up there. So, you know, that show happens. And, you know, we do the story. We do the interview and all this other shit. We do the footage. Like, nobody has this footage. It's all my shit. And, you know, I go in Monday, and I was basically like, I'll give you the story, but I want a job. Like, and if you don't give me a job, I'm not coming in. And I didn't. Like, so for 3 days, I just, like, fucking stayed at home. And I'll never forget, like, Don Morris, who was the creative director at the time, called me up. And he's like, dude, did you just, like, hold the company hostage for a job? He's like, yeah. And he was like, fuck yeah, dude. I like that shit. And then 2 days later, they called me with a job.
That's so dope.
Yeah.
So that, like, explains so much.
I know.
Okay. Because every time that... Okay, so we met you when you were an intern.
Yes.
And then, like, it seems like...
At SUNY Purchase.
Yeah, at SUNY Purchase. We're from there.
We're from there.
Yes. Yeah. And we took a picture with us and the Cool Kids played that night as well.
Yeah, the Cool Kids, and I think... No, that wasn't Angela Yee. That was the next year.
Yeah.
No, it was, like, Cloud Kicker Guys, my brother.
Yeah, Cool Kids.
Yeah.
But so... we met when you were an intern.
Yes.
And then, like,
I was fanning out, by the way. If you guys don't remember, like, oh, no, I was like, holy shit.
Nah, I remember that we went to Summer Jam and we saw you there. Yeah. And you were like, oh my God, you remembered my name.
Yes.
And you were so happy about that.
Dog, I fan the fuck. Like, I watched the all videos religiously in college, like, every single one. And, like, it was, it's fucking crazy. Like, you guys being at that Drake show let me know it was a big deal. Wow. Like, I was like, college kid,
not the Drake
Kaz
thing,
not the whole fucking future biggest rapper in the world is
the
here.
Guys that I watch on Not Right.
Yeah. Like the fucking guys that did the fucking the Cameron video.
Yeah.
Like the guy that did the, like, those guys are fucking here. And then, like, but
as the story goes, we knew you as the guy who was an intern the first time we met you,
and then, like, you were like the 2 weeks
later. We're like, that's how it's going in journalism right now.
Yeah,
like, what the fuck is happening over at the source?
Yeah, no, you held them hostage. That's fucking dope.
Yeah, I definitely held them hostage. They didn't like come in with a fucking A-Rod deal, but
no,
like,
but you got a title.
I got a title. I got some money, and I was going my senior year in college.
Crazy.
So I was like, I'm coasting.
Yeah.
And like the whole, and I was
so the,
like,
rest of life is going to be easy.
Yeah. I was like, this is that way, man? Like, shit.
All you got to do is just hold people hostage.
Yeah. All I got to do is just be like, give me what I want or else.
So graduating college, you're just like, I'm all set.
Yeah. Like, I was like teaching classes at one point. Like, my journalism professors were like, Kaz, you put this magazine out this week. What do you think we should do? And I was like, giving them like war tales of like finishing on deadlines about, like, you know, stories on Nas and Queen Latifah. Yeah, like, yeah, those people.
So who were some of the people that you were profiling?
Gosh, so the best thing about that was, like, it was still, they gave me the job, but they still were aiming for the big fish. Mm. So I got to, like, get all the blog era guys. So, like, the Wiz Khalifas, the Wale's, the Big Sean's,
Cuddy,
the Cuddy's, Drake's,
Asher Roth,
like, Charles Hamilton,
yeah,
fuck, Mickey Fax, all those guys, like, that were, like, doing numbers for us, you know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't want to touch all that because they wanted to go after the big guys. But, like, from then, I built such a solid rapport with, like, that entire, like, era of rapper because, yeah, they came up on, like, the Nah Rights and the Two Dope Boys and stuff like that. But if they made it in the source, like, if they made it on, like, actual paper,
oh, God,
yeah,
they're like, oh, this is a big fucking deal, you know what I'm saying? So, like, that was kind of, like, my end with them. And I just kind of, like, grew with those guys the bigger they got. So, like, if they ever wanted to do the source, and mind you, they didn't have, like, the source didn't have, like, the best reputation at the time, you know what I'm saying? Like, after the whole Eminem shit and, you know, however you felt about that whole regime, they were like, oh, J. Cole's on the song? Oh, okay, we can do that. Oh, Big Sean? Oh, okay. Oh, Wale, Wiz? Oh, so it was like, the stink of like the Eminem disses and the bankruptcies and all that shit was like starting to go away, and we had new ownership, and we had this whole new era of rappers that fucked with us, and like that it didn't like obviously didn't bring it back to like the prominence it once had,
right?
But like my whole goal was like, I just don't want to be a laughing stock anymore.
Yeah.
Like when I go to fucking like press events and like I'm at work fucking open bars or like listening sessions, I don't want people like the source.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because that happened a lot. That happened a whole lot. But like little by little, like, you know, people of high reputation started coming back. Like Commissario came back. Bonsu was running shit over there. Combat Jack, rest in peace, was over there. Sean Lynch. You know what I'm saying? Like,
shout out to Sean.
Yeah.
Sean, shout out to
Amy,
yeah.
Mech, all those guys. All like, them. All of a sudden, it was like a whole, it wasn't like the OG Mind Squad, but like, it was like the Mind Squad for like this generation.
You know, and also, you're you.
Yeah.
You don't have to bear the weight of like everyone.
Exactly.
Because you're Kaz, and the source is the source.
Yeah.
Your work stands on its own.
Yeah. And that was something that Hanif told me a lot. He was like, make sure, and I was still young, he was like, make sure when you get in this game, in this industry, that people fuck with you because of you and not for what you can do for them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so I could wear anybody's fucking jersey on my back. You know what I'm saying? Like, people fuck with Kaz because they fuck with Kaz, not because, oh, Kaz from the source, Kaz from translation, Kaz from wherever.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it was really good advice to hear at the time. And it went as far to get that magazine back to, you know, at least respectability.
Yeah,
you know totally. What I'm saying? Like, I just didn't want it to be a laughing stock no more.
Can you talk about Combat Jack as a boss?
Yeah, he was the best boss ever. Like, because, and I'll tell you about his last day, too. It was the funniest shit. So Combat was, you know, he had he almost was like, and this is the power of Twitter, he was like almost like a mentor to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, before he was even at the source, because he knew Londell, who was the owner, and you know, they went to college together, I think, like that. And you know, anybody who's been at the source can tell you sometimes working for Londell isn't the most fun time. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard. And young Kaz was young and stupid and was just very much like, oh, fuck this guy. But like, the older I get, the more I'm like, damn, he was dealing with a lot to try and put this thing back together. You know what I'm saying? So me being young and wild and fresh out of college, I'm like, yo, I could save this shit. I could do it. Just fucking listen to me. You know what I'm saying?
All you need is another 5,000 words on Drake.
Exactly. All you gotta do is take this Drake and then put him on your cover. I swear to God. That was one of my arguments. Yeah. Like, I was like, yo, this guy is the next guy. Put him on the cover. And they didn't believe in it. And then I think, I want to say Fader XXL went with the cover. And it was out of here. And I was just looking at everybody like, I told you, motherfucker. So the next time, like, we almost had to fucking overcompensate. So we might have gave J. Cole a cover before, like, most people felt he quote-unquote deserved it. But now you go and look back, and it's like, those are the things that you remember. You're like, oh, goddamn, look at J. Cole when he had short hair.
Yeah.
And he was wearing a weird Matrix jacket.
Yeah,
and
yeah, like, yeah.
You know, he didn't even have an album out yet, but we put him on the cover. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I wanted to do. So to the Combat Jack point, that was somebody who I can always vent to, you know what I'm saying? And to kind of tell him like, yo, man, like, this is that is going on, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, and he would kind of advise me on like how to, you know, work with Londell and how to talk to him, how to approach him, the kind of guy he was, you know? And then, you know, little by little, he took so much interest in the source because it's a legacy publication. And, you know, he was starting to get into his media game or whatever. And I just floated the idea. I'm like, yo, why don't you just come here? Like, we got a little bit of money. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sure you don't need it, but like,
so come. You recruited Combat Jack?
I could say that. Yeah. I could say that. Like, he was definitely somebody that I had a major hand in helping him come to the source. I won't say I have all the hands because clearly I wasn't the one signing the checks and cutting the checks.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and at St. Patrick's, you had soft hands anyway. So.
Fuck, that's how I got the rebound. But yeah, like, he was somebody that I was just like, yo, if you came here, man, like, you would get so much respectability, so much, you know, all that fucking goodwill will start coming back to this place. And he did, and that's what happened. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, I remember his first cover, he jumped out the window and fucking we put Idris Elba on the cover. And that was like the first fucking non-rapper we had on the cover in like forever. And people were like, it was so fucking split on how people felt about it. But it's like going looking back, I'm like, who the fuck is getting Idris Elba on a cover now?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's the kind of foresight Combat Jack had.
And that was for The Wire.
Like, yeah, that was from Thor. Mm. The first Thor movie. You know
really?
What I'm saying? Yeah. Like he didn't even have a big role. But he was like, yo, he knew how big that's another thing. Like that's how much foresight he had. He knew how big comic book movies were about to be. So like putting that movie together, we hadn't even seen Thor yet. He just knew Idris Elba was a main, he knew the comic book character that he was playing, the dude that fucking Heimdall or whatever, that like the dude that had
you're asking the wrong answer.
Yeah, no idea.
All right,
yeah,
sorry. Yeah, yeah. So he had a big important role, but it wasn't like a large part. You know what I'm saying? But he's the first guy that dies in Infinity War. You know what I'm saying? And like
spoiler alert, my God.
Oh, sorry, my fault. If you haven't seen Infinity War, Idris Elba dies in the first fucking 90 seconds. All right.
Well.
But he lasted all those movies, and it's like he had the foresight to know how big comic book culture was and how, you know, adopting to movies were.
Mm.
So like back then, he took a lot of heat for putting Idris Elba on the cover. But like now, it's like that motherfucker is like James Bond.
Yeah.
Like a motherfucker, he's a one-named fucking star in this world. Like you know, you say Idris, you know who the fuck that is.
So Combat's Last Day.
Combat's Last Day. So as I said, and I won't go into further details, him and Londell didn't usually get along. Right. And then I just remember, man, like the same way he would kind of coach me up. When I was thinking about saying, fuck this place and yada, 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 and, you know, he would tell me I got to do shit for the culture, I was giving him that talk, right? Like, you know, for weeks, I was like, yo, man, we got to stick into this. Like, you know, we got the dream team right here. It's like, you know, we just hit, like, home runs in a row. We had just got, like, Rick Ross, and then we got, like, Drake, and then we got Wiz, and, like, these big fucking covers that were, like, getting Miley Cyrus and Gucci and, like, all that shit. Like, well, Miley Cyrus was on the cover, but, like, that famous picture of Miley holding up the Gucci cover, which I think B-Dot wrote the cover story for, if I remember correctly. We was clicking, you know what I'm saying? And I remember Reggie just being like, yo, I'm about to go grab lunch. I'll be right back, yo. Once the elevator took his bag onto the elevator, never came back again. Never came back. Like four days later, I think it was like a Tuesday. And then I hit him like that Friday. I'm like, so are you coming back? He's like, nah, B. And he was just out. And it's like, you know, like the Combat Jack show was starting to like pop off or whatever. And like, you kind of tell him, he was like, fuck this shit. And I was like, and I wasn't even tired at him. Yeah. I was like, anybody who, I'm like almost a masochist. Like anybody who could like stay that long for that type of treatment. And he's older than me. He don't got to take this shit. But I'm young. I'm like, fuck, I need all the help I can get.
Hey gang, it's Jeff and Eric here. You remember us from 2 seconds ago. And we're from the podcast.
You know.
And we want you to know that on itsthereal.com/shop, right here and right now, you can go and get one of three rhyme books. Our line notebook that is for sale right now, which make great holiday presents.
Yeah, but we took it to another level. And the reason there's only three and three only is
because we got them signed by not only us, but also the Lux.
And we're talking Jadakiss, Styles, and Sheik, all three of them signing it for you guys. And we signed it as well because it is our book.
Yeah.
Three signed copies and three signed copies only. And the only place to get them is itsthereal.com/shop. Get it now. They make a fantastic holiday gift.
And hold on.
What's that?
What?
Huh?
Jadakiss is going to wrap it for you.
You are going to get a rhyme book signed by Jadakiss and wrapped by Jadakiss?
That's right.
Itsthereal.com/shop. What was your last day at the source like?
Oh, gosh. It was beautiful.
Well, wait. Before then, so you had seen like you had gone from the really nice glass offices at this point. Then you guys had gone down to like a box of a room.
Yes.
Like it was like just a conference room table that was like six people around.
It was one table in the middle, a couple of rooms, and just magazines on the floor everywhere. We might have had one room that we got to film shit in, but the place was a fucking mess. So my last day was around my birthday. I planned this out. I planned this out perfectly.
Capricorn season.
I'm a Pisces.
Doesn't matter.
Whatever. So, my plan was to have. I had just gotten the offer from Hip Hop Wired, and I was gonna take it. But my birthday was coming up. We just did this dope ass cover with 2 Chainz, Mac Miller, and Tyga. It was supposed to be Kendrick Lamar's the fourth guy, but he had just done Fader. And
so he was out.
So he was out. But he was in the story. We photographed him. We did there's a dope fucking insert of all 4 of them, you know, like on some Hey Young World shit, and minus 2 Chainz, who was obviously older than all these guys. And I wanted to throw a magazine reveal party and have it double as my birthday. And I was gonna quit the next day. And that's exactly what I did. I had the source pay for my fucking. We rented out this big fucking dope ass venue in Midtown, and 2 Chainz came, and the Breakfast Club came, and everybody that was. I think Matt came, Tyga came, Kendrick didn't come, but they all popped in for a little bit, and it doubled us. My brother Teyana Taylor came, bunch of people just.
How old are you?
God, I think this was my 20. Had to be 24. Or 25. I was like 24. I think I was 24.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck. So I was there for 5 years. I was there for 4 years. 21. No, it had to be my 25th. Anyway, not important. I partied it up. I got hammered on All in Their Dime. Like 2 Chainz came and did some songs and shit. It was super lit. The whole fucking city was out. You guys were there.
Yeah.
It was fucking crazy. And then the next day, I went to Wandell's office, and I was like, yeah, man.
I got to take lunch.
I got this offer. I mean, I told him face to face. I was like, yo, I got this offer from Hip Hop Wired, and I'm going to take it. So, you know, this is my 2 weeks notice or whatever. And he's like, oh, you don't need 2 weeks. Tomorrow could be your last day. I was like,
damn.
Great. Yeah. I was like, all right. So,
happy birthday.
I was like, fuck, I got paid and I get to fucking chill out for a couple weeks. I'm like, shit, I'll take that.
Well, here's why the birthdays do matter is because on your 26th birthday, we were called in to be part of your. You're not even a celebrity at that point.
No.
Your birthday roast.
Yes.
So you had us. You had Pete Davidson.
Yo, in hindsight.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
What a fucking
great lineup.
What a lineup. We have Melissa Ford.
Yeah.
Peter Rosenberg.
That's right.
Well, Peter was hosting it.
Peter Rosenberg hosting it.
Yeah.
Mike Brown.
Yeah.
You guys.
Yeah. It was a big
Jazz
night.
Fly.
Big night.
Yep.
Like
big night.
We got
Chris Fox.
Chris Fox.
So wait.
Low key.
We have Jamal. Jamal was there.
Jamal.
We have to wind it back a little bit. So Peter Rosenberg. I don't know if you know this, but he told us he was like, I don't even know Kaz.
Exactly. We didn't even know each other like that. I was just like, yo, it was so audacious to have a roast at like 26 years old.
Yeah,
like,
what have you done?
Fuck yeah, I've done shit. Yeah. That was the whole running joke. The whole running joke was like, I have not done shit.
And so we went up there. It was, by the way, sponsored by Uvu. It was streaming.
It was streaming.
Oh. It was a big night.
But Eric and I requested that it not stream during our parts.
Oh, boy.
Because
if it did,
we let the yapper off.
Oh, my God. Wait, do you guys still have the bit?
Yeah,
we have all of them.
Can we, please?
No.
There's no way we can do that here.
Please?
No, man. Podcasts are forever. This night
all right,
was meant
I'll try,
for.
I'll try and briefly describe it for you guys. It wasn't.
Yeah, we burned every bridge.
Listen. Anybody who came up in the blog era, I'm not going to mention names, but anybody who came up in the blog era, caught a stray.
They were pretty direct.
They were pretty direct. Oh, okay, all right. They were pretty direct shots. Like, never in my life. And that was the beauty of it. Like, because the beauty of the fucking roast was that I didn't get the worst of it because everybody knew. I was like, oh, what the fuck? What am I going to make fun of Cass for? Like, he hasn't done shit. Like, the whole running joke was like, why are you throwing a roast? You're 26 years old.
You're making people pay for it.
You're making people pay for it. I had people paid to come to this shit. I was like, yo. Because I was just so fucking high off myself. I was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to throw a roast. Fuck it.
I'm the king of St. Patrick's.
Like that shit, right? We was doing the Comedy Central roast was doing that shit.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I was like, I want to do one. But Jeff and Eric. So everybody who came had like little hee-hee-ha-ha jokes. Mm-hmm. Like Pete had a little something. Jazz had a little thing. Well, Jazz ended up not doing her thing. couple people. Who else? Fucking... You know, Mike, Mess, you know, Lowe, Melissa Ford, Pete.
Chris Fox said,
they all came.
How old are you?
Yeah.
And you said 26, and you said, no way.
That was his job. And that was it. That was it. He left.
So a lot of people didn't come. Dan Charnas was sure, there. Yeah, like there was so many people who like just kind of were prepared. These two motherfuckers came with the yoppers loaded. Yo. And it was a bloodbath in there.
I'm not sure that people expected us
no,
to do that.
No, they did not.
People were
I
making fun of us for being prepared.
That's what I was like, yo, guys, you know, this is like it's a joke.
It's a roast. Like, yeah. Anybody could get it.
But you guys were like, no, fuck.
Yo, we had the crowd going crazy.
It was such an elite mix of
everybody on stage got
silence.
It. Oh yeah. People in the building, not in the building, it didn't matter.
It was such a fucking roller coaster of awkward silence and belly up laughter.
It's crazy.
That I had never seen like in that like in that group of like people who run around, and it was so beautiful that nobody taped it. It's one of those things where it's like, yo, if you were there,
it's funny too, because people do say to us, they're like, you know, part of your brand is being nice, and I wouldn't say that that's part of our brand. Yeah.
You're just nice guys.
We're nice guys, and we have great relationships.
Yeah.
But on a night like this,
we fucking...
You got a job to do.
Yo!
And we killed.
There were people... I'm not going to mention names. There were people who legitimately wanted to fight Jeff and Eric.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
This shit. That's how bad this roast... Like, not bad fact. And bad, but bad as in like... There was blood on the fucking leaves.
No. We went full out. And we had the best time, and we did it.
It was the best. We're still talking about it to this day.
Because we love you, Kaz. You roast the ones you love.
Oh, my God.
Everybody got it. It was great.
It was insane.
Now, how do you top your birthday after that? You have, like, onesie parties.
Now, I have onesie parties every year. I'm like,
so cozy.
Every single year, I toy with the idea of doing another roast.
Oh, my God.
We couldn't do it in this era. There'd be too many cell phones. Oh. There'd be too much video going around.
Yeah, that is true. Because for a second, I was like, oh, I could do it. By the way, we
walked out of there. We made a beeline out of there, and we get out, and it was cold. Uh-huh. It was cold outside, and Jeff and I were just like,
"Oh, we got to
that was fucking
stage.
Awesome. We got to
awesome.
Go again.
We
got to go somewhere."
We were in the New York Post. Remember that shit? We were in the New York Post. They were like, "Oh, people are throwing roles for themselves now."
You know who had a great sense of humor? Melissa Ford.
Melissa was awesome.
Great sense of humor.
She caught like probably more strays than anybody.
Oh, we said some mean things.
Yeah, you said some mean shit about her, but she took it in such stride, and she gave it back to everybody.
Oh, it was awesome.
Like, oh, man.
It was awesome.
It was so much fun.
It was a great night.
It was a great fucking night. Jeez.
So you had this whole 4 or 5 years with print.
Yes.
And obviously like online stuff too, but that's a physical copy that you can get at a real newsstand that you can like frame at home, like the whole thing. Now you go into a website.
Yes.
What was that like?
It was, I thought it was the natural progression. I didn't want to be the last person hanging on the print wave. You know, I saw it. I was already the online editor over there. I already knew the power of the blogs and the internet and having a strong web presence. And I knew how much money we were losing every time we were printing out an issue. So I was like, I got to get on this digital wave. So I tried to treat each piece of content like a magazine cover. I was like, all right, if I give each video or interview the same kind of attention we gave like these guys when we're shooting the cover footage of them, I think we'll be fine. And that's what I initially went in there thinking and doing. I was a senior editor over there, so I was creating as much content as I can and trying to, you know, make sure that, you know, we were competing with, you know, the Not Rights, the Two Dope Boys, the Double XLs, the Complexes, and stuff like that. We had, like, you know, we had a puncher's chance of getting some hits here and there. We had Bossip being our kind of, like, online overlord, so if we really needed something to get out to do numbers, we could put on Bossip and it's gonna do numbers. But you know, that's kind of what I did, and it wasn't too hard of a transformation because I loved making print. I loved like the feeling of it, but I knew how much fucking work it took for such little reward. You know what I mean? Like at that point, the only reward you were getting out of it was like, oh, look at this magazine we made.
Right.
Like, we knew we were losing money every time. Like, we knew the ads were getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
All because they spent so much money on your birthday party.
Yeah, like, I had to do it big for them. And
but if we jump ahead a couple of years and you're at Translation.
Yes.
you started The Stashed as an online-only thing, yes. but it had a print component.
Yes, yeah.
Well, what was important to you about making something that was going to sit on someone's, you know, coffee table?
Honestly, it was Steve Stout. Like, Steve Stout was the guy who wanted that, and he had the pockets to make it happen. And I knew the mechanics of how making a print magazine was. I knew how it really wasn't terribly profitable at that point. But his exact words were, I just want to do something for the culture. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't care if it makes money or loses money. Like, I just want to do some dope shit to put out there, because he knew the value of that.
And you were like, you don't have to worry about it making money, because it is going to lose money for sure.
Yeah, I was like, honestly, like, thanks for saying that shit, because, oh, boy. And, like, you know, it wasn't like he wanted to just make a newsstand magazine. He wanted that shit to be, like, art. He wanted to be, like, on coffee tables. He was like, I don't give a fuck how much it costs. Just make that shit look fucking dope. You know what I'm saying? And we did, man. Like, it was something where it was such a labor of love, because he was like, I don't want no ads in it. It's like, I don't want nothing. I just want that shit to be a piece of fucking artwork. And I'm just like, now if you go back and look at that shit, like, goddamn.
Wiz on the cover,
Pete Davidson shoe, Carrie Champion, like Purcell, like all these people who became like
heavy paper.
Heavy paper was like foil. Like, some people still have it like in their wrapping. Like, some people still have it like autographed and all this other shit. Like, I'm so proud of that shit, because like, I still go to my friend's house and it's still like there, and it's still fucking on their coffee table.
Pete Davidson?
Yeah, well, not Pete Davidson's house, but...
You said your friend, I don't know. He's from Staten Island.
This is true. I was supposed to hang out with Pete during WrestleMania. We were both in New Orleans. He was shooting something for... I think he was shooting that MGK thing.
Wait, we were all down in New Orleans.
Yes, right.
Because we all love wrestling.
Yes, exactly. We were down there for WrestleMania. And,
we were down there for Wally Mania.
Thank you. Goddamn. Yeah. Shout out to Falarn, man.
Yo, shout out to Wally.
Yeah, shout out
to
Wally.
Like, that was an amazing time, man. Like, I loved, like, looking back, like, that's probably like the happiest I was, like, creating something.
Well, how was it being a boss for the first time?
That's all it was. Like, the funny shit was, after my run at Hip Hop Wire kind of ended, one of my friends literally asked me, like, all right, you've done all this shit already. If you could just, like, write a blank canvas on what you want to do, what would it be? And I was basically like, man, I just want to run my own shit. You know what I mean? Like, and that shit just manifested. Like, and then Lisa Musich and Sophie Ash.
Shout out to Sophie, the god.
She put me on and introduced me to Steve Stout. I was like, yo, you should meet this guy, and yada, yada, yada. And then I went through the whole interview process, and, you know, they hired me at Translation to some, like, nondescript digital content creator guy that was only supposed to work on this one special project. You know what I'm saying? So
you had an office that was just like away from everybody
else. Yeah, basically. Yeah. Like,
it was like under the stairs.
I was just away from everyone and downstairs. I wasn't even on the main floor. They had a secondary floor that they put like all their like artistic guys.
That's right.
Guys
Fafu.
Like, yeah. Shout out to Faf. Like, it was right down there. And then, you know, it was just about like, okay, here's what we're going to pay you. Go ahead and make this thing. And I didn't really have any guidelines. It was like, just go and do it. So, like, I came up with the name. I helped pick the logo out. I fucking, you know, started just crafting up fucking content ideas or whatever. And, like, franchises and, like, all these things, like, immediately took off. Like, I just had, like, I got to play with Stout's money. And I knew what was doing well on the internet. So, like, I remember, I'll never forget the first piece of content I created was it was a video called Driven, and I had to go to Dom Kennedy's house, and Dom Kennedy hadn't been heard from at all since the Yellow album, album, and he was working on Get Home Safely, and he didn't talk to anybody. Like, he didn't do no interviews, he didn't do nothing, and he's not like the most like interview happy person anyway. So I went to his crib. I remember going to his crib, and it was just like, I think it was on top of, like, the store that he owned or whatever. And he was just kicking it, just, like, fucking playing music and shit. And I was just like, wow, this is it. Like, it was the first time, like, I wasn't on assignment. I was, like, creating something of my own. And then, like, I gave him the link, and he shot it out. And, like, that first video pops up on, like, you know, happily I had all these fucking connections I made from other blogs. So, like, you know, it hit Not Right, it hit Two Dope Boys, it hit y'all shit, it hit Complex XXL.
It didn't,
like,
hit our shit. No. Well,
you tweeted it out.
Yeah, somebody might have retweeted it.
God,
but, like,
damn it.
It's thereal.com only puts up It's the Real.
That's
content.
Right, that's,
hey,
right.
Listen,
yeah.
you supported it. That's all that mattered.
That is true.
And then, you know, they were like, oh, what's this thing? And then now Stash was like a fucking, we hit the ground running. Then we had content with, like, The Dream and, like, you know, Wyclef and Wale and, you know, the same group of guys that I've been, you know, coming up with the whole time. The Big Sean's, the Wizzes, all those dudes. And, you know, once you got those guys on lock, now you got a full-blown fucking entity that was, like, you know, we were late to the game, but we were just like, fuck it. We're late. We got to hurry up. We got to get the best shit and get into this pack. And, you know.
Yeah, but if we're sensing patterns here, another one is the fact that you took money and threw a big party.
Yes.
And we were at the Stashed's party.
Yes.
The first time that I, or maybe anybody, heard Back to Back out live.
Yes.
That night.
Yes. Yeah.
And I remember Corey Towns coming in and we all shit on him so bad.
Because he's from
Philly.
Poor Corey.
God, that was a rough week for Philly, man. I remember that shit so vividly because I was like, okay, we're going to try and make this like a classy Henny Palooza. That was my goal for the Stash That Anniversary Party. And the one thing we loved about Paloozas, we don't call it the other word anymore.
Right.
The reason why we love Paloozas was it was a great place to test out new music.
Mm.
Yep.
So the first time I got to hear Back to Back in a crowd of people, I was like, this song isn't going to go anywhere for a while.
Oh, it was and everything.
It was like, I thought it was going to be, oh, it's a quick little response. I'm like, nah, this shit is like a banger. Like,
yeah,
everybody knew every single word.
It was
unreal.
The biggest song of the year. It was Grammy nominated.
Yeah.
It was a Grammy nominated diss record, and people, like, girls were shaking their ass. Like,
I don't know who was crazy. Austin Mills or whoever was DJing. Like, that was a SoundCloud link.
Yes,
you know, like that.
Yes.
Was, yeah,
I think it was Austin and Mecca that DJed that night. And
yeah, it was like the night of or next night.
It was the night of.
Yeah,
it was and
night
I
of,
think
yeah.
like Boss. Cameron performed and did some songs on Wale performed the El Varner.
Yeah.
Good times, man.
It was a great night.
Yeah.
So, Palooza.
Yes. Do say Palooza.
At this point, people were very familiar with what the story is. We've had Cam on, we've had Rory on, we've had Lowe on, we've had Chris Styles on.
Yes.
You're here. What is your perspective of what everyone knows was a party that started amongst friends in an apartment that has grown immensely to go in every major city in America and beyond?
I mean, my perspective of it is, like, anytime I think, well, a big part of your career is, like, seeing where the trends are going. You know what I'm saying? And I'm happy that I'm in a group of people that knows what to do to set those trends forward. You know what I'm saying? Like, at first, we knew we couldn't just have it at a house the whole time. And then it was like, okay, we can't just have it at, like, Tammany Hall. It's like, okay, we can't just have it in New York. Okay, now we can't just have it in these major cities. We got to hit these smaller cities, too. It was like, okay, now we got to do it outside. And we've always kind of, every year, there's been, like, gradual growth, you know? And that's what you want to see in any line of work, you know what I mean? And out of everything that I've done, this December makes it 6 years that I've been doing this, you know, and it's the longest. It's the one thing I'm tied to the longest out of, like, whether it's fucking, you know, sports or music or wrestling or whatever. Like, that's the one constant, you know. And
it's true. When we walked through the Times Square subway station and we saw your Bumble advertisement, it did list you as as Doucet Palooza co-founder. Yeah.
But it didn't say that you were the guy with
the water gun. Oh, breaking news! This 22nd, this last one. I'm retiring my gun.
What?
Wow.
I'm retiring it. Yeah. What? It's time.
Raise the water gun to the
put
rafters.
The water gun in the rafters, yo. It's time to find a new shooter. It's time to, you know.
What will you do, Kaz?
Wait, is it because of the political climate?
A little bit. I mean, you know, it's like I've had such a run with it and people kind of know you for it. And
you don't want to be painted in the corner as that guy.
Yeah. And I don't mind it. I haven't minded it
for a while.
Wait,
so what's your new bit going to be?
I'm playing the behind the scenes, man. No,
like, oh, that's why they confuse you for Rory.
Yeah, exactly. That's the exact reason why. Nah, man. Like, it's kind of.
Are you gonna be the guy that everyone hits up for tickets now?
Well, that's never stopped. Like, that's literally what my phone was just on the way over here. But yeah, nah, man. You know, we all of, like, the foundational members of Palooza have definitely become much more like elder statesmen. And, you know, the only way to secure the future is to look towards it. You know what I'm saying? So
you don't want to be a 38-year-old guy.
No, I do not.
Squirting.
We're in the business of
Douce shots into like 21-year-old girls' mouths.
Absolutely not.
Sponsored by Douce.
Yeah, and have my fucking big ass mug.
Yeah. Become a meme.
Yeah. I mean, I've been a meme.
Shot by Raven's assistant.
Exactly. Like, you know, everybody's kind of leveling up, man. Like throughout the entire crew.
Well, so on the 22nd, being that this is your last time on stage with that water gun, mm-hmm. what are you gonna do to really, like, you know?
Yeah.
Set it off.
You need to bring like a huge water.
I gotta get
a hose or something.
That's a really good one.
You know, and you know what's crazy?
That,
like, that, and like a lot of toy stores don't sell water guns no more.
Is that right?
Yeah, like, you'd be surprised. Like, it's hard trying to find water guns in stores now. Like, I don't know why.
What's the most like last minute, like, run around that you had to do to get your water gun?
Oh, they're all last minute. That's the rush.
How do you not have the rush one thing to do?
Like, yeah. Like,
oh, fuck, the gun.
Exactly. Like, it's fun. Like, sometimes, like, there was a while that I had, like, a consistent gun for a little while. But, you know, I would always lose it. Like, it's kind of like good luck for me. So it's like, if it's a good time and everybody enjoyed itself, the gun just kind of give the gun back to the universe.
It's like the Godfather, like, drop the water gun.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But now it's just kind of like, well, all right. What's left to do? You know what I'm saying?
Is there any Palooza that stands out to you more than any other?
Yeah. My favorite to this day. I mean, like, obviously, it's hot. I thought it was easy, but it really wasn't.
I thought you always liked, I think you said, like, DC? The Northeast.
Yeah.
Like the one that was in, like, Providence or something?
Oh, yeah. All right. So Providence was, like, that was a city where we were just kind of like, there's a bag here. Let's go. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, we were really big on, like, surprise guests and putting on this great show and all this other stuff. But this was, like, one of the first times we were just like, oh, they just really want us here. All right, cool. And that was one of the first parties that I realized people came to see us. Mm. Like, for a long time, I was like, oh, people come because they get free drinks, or, you know, a rapper might show up, or fucking, you
or
know,
get sprayed in the face by the guy,
or
with
they
the
get
gun
sprayed in the face. Yeah. Like, I just turned 21 and I want to get drunk with my friends for the first
time. Right.
You know, like, there was always something. But Providence was like, and this is going to sound so fucking cheesy, I don't even want to say it, but Providence was like the first city that
made you feel special,
made me feel like a rock star a little bit. Yeah, like,
yeah. No, that, I mean, it was the first time.
That's fair.
Like, it was the first time that, like, people recognized us.
Yeah.
And wasn't just like, and it's easy to, like, recognize Chris and Lowe.
Sure.
And Austin and Mecca. Those are the faces of the people. But, like, people were coming up to me, to Cam. People knew Raven. People knew all of us. And we're just like, in Providence? Like,
that's dope.
You know what I'm saying? And on top of that, it was such a fire fucking party. Like, they came and they were there as soon as the door opened. They stayed the whole fucking time. Like, everybody was fucking drunk. And it wasn't, like, super sold out, but it was just enough people and liquor and good music that everybody was, like, equally amounts wasted. And it was just like, damn. And Providence has beautiful women too, like, just amazingly, like, all these, like,
well,
Cape
Verdean.
But
what city doesn't?
Right.
Gosh, what city doesn't have beautiful women? The least beautiful women.
Don't do this, Kaz. This is a bad road.
This is a bad road I'm going. I got a podcast called Flinger too. It gets way worse. Trust me. The one city, I would say the Bay. The Bay was a little, They had, I mean, there was some beautiful women there, but if I just had to go like per capita.
Are you just trying to be the heel? Like, just, like you want to get booed the moment you step back into no, like, but San Francisco, Oakland?
When is Dusey Palooza coming back to the
Bay? Oh, gosh, I don't know, actually. But shit, but I
love
ladies
show up and prove Kaz wrong.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
When we did the fucking, when I did the Marshawn Lynch show, I was basically living there for like a month. So, like, I always love the Bay Area. Like,
that shit is awesome. You, backing up. Yeah.
Yeah. I almost pulled the muscle back, backtracking on that statement. But yeah, no.
So,
a little better.
you've had a lot of personal success and a lot of wins, but there have been times, especially last year, where there were valleys and everything wasn't like going full speed ahead. You lost your dad.
Yes.
And you changed jobs unexpectedly.
Yes.
How did you feel at the worst point, and how did you find your way out?
You know, it was one of those things where between like my father passing, combat passing, and just like not really coping with that the best way, I kind of felt like personally it was probably the best thing that could happen to me at that point. Cause I always felt like it can't get lower than this. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure it can. I don't wanna, you know, test his will. But it was definitely a point where I just kind of had to like, if this was like the first real L in life I had to take, it made me realize how blessed I really have been, you know, throughout my entire, like I said earlier, it's like, oh, just get out of college, have a full-time job at a magazine. You look, oh yeah, life is easy. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, it was almost me looking at life and be like, I needed this L. Like these L's were like so fucking needed, because I had to be able to really look myself in the mirror and kind of see what I wanted my life to be like, you know what I mean? What I really wanted to chase after, and you know, what I really wanted to become. Because the person that was, my biggest cheerleader was gone, and I didn't really know how to really handle that. You know, like we didn't have, you know, my mom raised me, my dad didn't, you know, live with me. And, you know, we were playing catch up for like the last 6 years, and then he gets super duper sick. And it was something where you kind of believe something about your father for most of your life, and then you get to know the actual human being. You know what I'm saying? He's not just dad no more. Like, this is the human that raised you, that helped raise you. And you know, you're just, I don't want to say it's sad, because like, you know, I got those last moments. He got to hold the magazine. He got to hold Stash in his hand. He got to see me on MTV. He got to see all these amazing things. And if the best thing that could happen is him not seeing me at my lowest, or like not be here presently when I was at my lowest, then I was like, it really put everything in perspective. It's like, oh, okay, boom. I know what it is to be like a blessed human being now. Like, I wasn't saying I was taking anything for granted, but I just had no choice but to really accept, like, this was how life is for a lot of people, you know what I'm saying? And realize how lucky you are to have gotten this far this soon in life, you know? So, you know, bouncing back was just kind of like a gut check as far as, like, how bad do you really want this? You know what I'm saying? Like, do you want to just kind of just go back to, you know, writing blogs and just, you know, you could always do that. You can always go back to the content game and just go back to being like, oh, you can go get a job at XXL. You can go get a job at Billboard or some shit like that. But like, what do you really, really want to do? What is something you can do that like you can look back and be proud of? Your pops can look back and be proud of. Your future yous can look back and be proud of. And in many ways, it was, I wanted to become a personality. I wanted people to know who I was. And I always loved pro wrestling. Like, and that's something like my dad introduced me to. You know what I'm saying? Like, my earliest memory in life was maybe 1.5, 2 years old Kaz sitting in my dad's lap watching Survivor Series 1989. And I have the same poster in my apartment. It's framed. One of my exes got it for me. It's one of the best fucking gifts I've ever gotten in my life from anyone. And like, that was something that brought my family together was watching wrestling on Sunday nights or Monday nights. And, you know, I had an opportunity that I never thought I would get. It was like, you know, y'all know me. Like, and everything I did, I always worked in some sort of pro wrestling in there just because I loved this shit. And I just thought it was just the best form of entertainment to me. And it kind of felt like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to actually be a part of this and you know, create your own legacy in it. And it's something, you know, I know if my dad saw me doing it, he'd be super-duper excited over, yeah. Like, super proud of. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's why I jumped in full force with it, man. Like, especially now, being, like, the only black writer on the show. Like, one and a half. There's, like, you know, it's a half and half.
There's
guy,
a Drake.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
There's a Drake. Shout out to Ryan Ward. That's my guy. But, like, you know, I know there's a big responsibility for that because, you know, it's I know it's rare, you know what I'm saying? Like, as a content creator, as somebody who hosts a show and, you know, tries to be funny sometimes, or just people I admire as far as thought processes and shit, I love Patrice O'Neill. Yeah. That's like he's one of the greatest fucking, you know, minds, hilarious comics I've ever walked this earth. And he was a former WWE writer, you know what I'm saying?
Is that right?
It's like, yeah. And it's like one of those things where it's just like, damn, I could be like in a very elite group of somethings. Like, even if I could stop working there tomorrow, you know what I mean? Like, I want to just be able to say, like, I did those. Like, I got like a couple of projects that I saw through and created and got on TV that people loved, that people hated, that people like whatever. But like, just the fact that I could be like, this is my shit. Like, this character is somebody that I helped bring to life. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the shit that drives me. That's the shit that's like super fucking exciting to me.
When we were all together for Wale Mania.
Yeah.
And for WrestleMania.
Yes.
Down in New Orleans. Uh-huh. And you told us that night that you had accepted the job and it was coming up, and not to say anything.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We couldn't have been any more proud of you.
Yeah.
Like, this was like, we had seen you at your darkest.
Yeah.
We had seen you successful too, but to do something that you loved and to be able to finally get that in an opportunity that not a lot of people do, that was amazing for us.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, how long do we have to sit on this? And you're like, oh, I got the perfect Instagram post. I'm so ready. And then a couple weeks later, maybe a month later, whatever it was, that post went up and it was you in a suit outside of the headquarters up there in Connecticut. What was that like? And what was the response like, too? Because we weren't the only ones who were happy.
Nah, it was... Here's the thing, right? When you leave a spot like BR...
Bleacher Report.
Yeah, you can't go linear. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't go lower. And I don't know if that sounds kind of vain or whatever, but, like, just as a businessman, as a career person, like, you always want to keep striving higher, whether that's money wise, whether that's how you feel on the inside, whether it's your happiness, like, something has to go up. And there was a lot of ups at BR, you know what I'm saying? But being there, it felt good to know how many people knew how much it meant to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it felt good to know that people saw that and was like, he deserves that shit. Like, everybody knows how much I fucking loved wrestling, like, tried to make wrestling cool for people around people who wouldn't give wrestling a second thought. You know what I'm saying?
Like you guys, perfect example.
You know, like, it was something that made me really fucking.
And we've had real conversations, by the way, where I know you were like, yo, it's like ballet.
Yeah.
and there's more to it than just, like, you know, throwing people. This is, like, legitimate, like, teamwork.
I think that you and Wale, not to get off track, but, like, you guys made me respected in a way that I had never really given it credit for.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I think that that's the way that we've sort of moved forward in our relationship in terms of that. Like, I think that it makes us happy to see you doing something you love, but also that it's not like some like stupid thing. It's something that there's like actual care in.
Yeah, dude. It's one of those things where it's like, and I won't talk too much about it, but you know, just like, you know, before I got there, you have so much respect for these people because, you know, you understand the grind. And like, I thought I knew the grind of it being on the road. People see my Instagram story being on the road every single week. And I'm not even getting physical.
Right.
Like, I'm just writing, You know what I'm saying? Like, these people do this all the time, put their bodies on the line. They have to remember shit that we write them. Sometimes they give us stuff. Then, like, you got to work with that. Like, you got to be half stuntman, half actor, half fucking partner, half all these things. There's so many things that go into the creation of just one episode of Monday Night Raw. Like, one episode of SmackDown. Like, and I've done dozens of Douce Paloozas. I've thrown my own parties. It is not even a fucking half of a decimal of what goes into one production of this show. You know what I'm saying? It is the longest running show in television history, episodic show in television history. That's not like the news or like whatever, Sports Center. Like, it's the longest running episodic TV show ever. And it's like a fucking machine. It's like, I tell people, it's like TV boot camp. Mm. Whatever you don't know about creating content, you will know by the time you are done with the working over there, especially as a creative. So,
I almost became a WWE writer.
Yes, yes, you told me about this. You applied.
Well, sort of. they told me to watch an episode, yeah. And I got like halfway through, and I was like,
I'm good.
I think I'm off of this.
No, it's definitely
like Rey Mysterio and
Rey. That's my guy. Yeah. It's definitely not for
the lighthearted.
Lighthearted. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is definitely for people who take their craft so seriously, and they're super dedicated to it. Like, you can't be half-assed in this thing. You know, like, there's a lot of people that trust you. There's a lot of people that trust your mind. A lot of people that trust, you know, the position you're in. And, you know, I don't take that lightly. Like, especially as a black writer, I don't take that lightly. Like, I know I have no room for clownery. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost, it's like wanting to, it's a lot of responsibility. And I don't take any of it lightly, man. But I wouldn't trade it for anything.
So as we approach 2019 and you look back at your life and, you know, since Staten Island, are you the JV kid at St. Patrick's? Are you the varsity player at St. Patrick's? Are you the kid at Dominican? Are you the kid who's outside playing ball with your brother? Who are you?
Gosh, I'm so different. I'm not. I'm.
Are you
I'm,
KD coming to kill you guys? Mo kill.
I'm the older KD. Like, I'm at this point.
How many Twitter accounts do you have?
I still don't have a Finsta. I don't have a ghost account either. But a lot of my friends got fit. Like Ray B got a Finsta. Like, you know, a lot of people got Finstas now, man. Like, and I might get it. I respect the wave, but. you know, I can't say that I'm the same person I was last month that I was, you know, back in playing high school or JV or whatever. Like, between being the head of content at Station Head, between Douce Palooza, between, you know, being, you know, Flagrant 2 has become such a fucking massive force, you know, between, you know, Uninterrupted hosting that shit, like still writing for Paper Magazine sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, my goal last year when I was at my lowest was to see what I could accomplish if I just exhaust all of my talents. Like, I wanted to be the best, the absolute peak version of myself, physically, mentally, career-wise. I'm like, I want to be an alpha in everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to be the smartest guy in the room. I want to be the most fit. I want to have the best ideas at the table. I want to be able to fucking lead a team. I want to show people that I can be good at anything and everything. And I never wanted to feel like I felt last year ever again. You know, because this, you know, I talked about this a little bit on the Rap Writer show. I was like, it is a weird time to be... It's a weird time to want to just write about hip hop, to want to just create content for hip hop. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost like it's good to have that as your DNA, so you can bring it to other shit, like to create content, create podcasts and shows and all this other shit, to create writing for other shows or bring it as a head of, you know, spearheading a new app and all this other shit. Like, it's like you see certain people that came up in our era, like the blog era, and you see what they've gone on to do, and you're like, that person's street cred or that hip hop cred or whatever it is cred is solid. Like, you see Joe LaPuma, you see his fucking sneaker shopping blowing up and watching on MSG. He's like, yeah, I was watching this motherfucker since for 10 years. He's legit. You see fucking stadium goods get sold for a couple $1 million, and you see Miss Info, like, yeah, Miss Info is fucking legit. She deserves that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, you see Lowe gets the Apple deal, deserves that shit. You see Rory get the Spotify deal, he deserves that shit. Like, everybody, Mecca, fucking everybody in this era is like, yeah, like, everybody's just fucking leveling up. But, like, you're not forgetting what got you to the dance. You know what I'm saying? It's part of you. And that's kind of what I've wanted to explain to those guys. Like, you don't have to leave it all behind. You can take it with you and use it, you know, to propel you to something different. Because as long as you're not, like, trying to, like, fit into, like, whatever little box that people have for you, then you can literally do whatever the fuck you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, people telling you, oh, why don't you just focus on one thing or do this? Like, you can do that. That's the safe thing to do. But, like, you don't have to. You know what I mean? Like, it's just how bad do you really want it? Like, sometimes you're not going to sleep. Sometimes you're going to sleep for 2 days in a row. Like, how bad do you really want all of this success and all of these wins? And on top of that, be willing to give that as well. You know, I'm not greedy. Like, I give opportunity to a lot of people. I've put people in positions that have gone on to do amazing, amazing things. And, you know, as long as you're appreciative of that, and as long as, you know what you're doing and yourself is pure, it don't matter how low you ever get, you can always bounce back knowing, like, hey, like, you put enough good out there, it'll come back.
For sure. Well, listen, you know, we've seen your whole career at this point, yes. And it's been pretty special to watch. So congratulations on everything. Thanks, up to this bro. Point. And congratulations for everything that's in your future. And it's really dope that you can look back at all this stuff and be like, you know what? I got love for each and every situation that I found myself in besides Deuce Palooza in the Bay. No love for the girls out there.
No love for the girls in the Bay. I'm just saying that just per capita. Okay. They're all right. God damn it.
Well, thanks for coming over.
Thanks, buds.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real. Jeff, if you want to find out more about us, I'm Eric, you're Jeff. Curly hair, glasses, tall, taller, Nikes, no apostrophe, no spaces. It's The Real. If people want to find out more about this podcast, it's called A Waste of Time with It's The Real. We also have two Jews and two black dudes review the movies. Jeff, if people want to find out more about what's going on in this world of ours that we've created over the space of 11 years, moving on to our 12th, Jeff, where can they go?
You can always go to itsthereal.com. And specifically, itsthereal.com/shop. Go get those three rhyme books that are signed by the Locks. Go get one, go get two, go get three, whatever. Live your life at itsthereal.com/shop. You can also find our podcast. Search for It's The Real on iTunes, It's The Real on Spotify, It's The Real on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/awasteoftime, soundcloud.com/2Jews2BlackDudes. You can also find our music. If you search for Teddy Bear Fresh or It's The Real on Spotify or any other streaming service, you can also find us on all social media at It's The Real. It's The Real on Twitter. It's The Real on Facebook. It's The Real on Instagram. And that is how you slow jam the news.
Jeff, one of my favorite things of the 12 Days of Podcast, the fact that we put out the word and say, hey, we want to shout you guys out. And there has been such a strong response. And we are about to shout you guys out right now. All the hard work that you've put in to reach us, message has been received. Jeff, it's on you.
Shout out to the Bucket Up Podcast, the Bucket Hat Boys, Tylante, and JB Speak.
You know what? They support us. They went and bought a rhyme book from Barnes & Noble or Amazon or itsthereal.com. It's not signed, but they did support. Shout out to those guys who have been letting us know that they're rocking with us on Instagram.
A big shout out to @MiaJackets on Twitter and the blog Lucky7Magazine.org and Jonathan Davila and Deadass Though, the podcast straight out of Florida, thanks to Shells386.
Shout out to Chip Off Your Block. Shout out not only to him, but also the whole Daps Pounds podcast.
shout out to the D plus A podcast and Devin No One Cares.
Shout out to Road Knowledge, who's been a longtime supporter. Also, Carlos and Amber, who just got engaged.
Hey, shout out to them. That's Brick Foley.
Shout out to Samuel underscore underscore. And my jokes are funny. That's Lawrence R on Twitter. Also, I want to shout out at Play Out of Tune and I am DJ APM.
I want to shout baby girl Cashly Banks. I want to shout out Doeasy 106 El Barrio and Mother Bell's Bish.
I want to shout out Nivik Milknobs.
Hell of a name.
Hell of a name. Part of the asshole army. Nivik Milknobs. Nivik Milknobs. The more I say it, the more I like it. Nivik Milknobs. Nivik Milknobs.
Anybody else?
The more you
pronounce it, the less you can pronounce it.
Nivik Milknobs. Nivik Milknobs. Nivik Milknobs. The Nivik Milknobs.
Is it the?
That's my new band.
Oh.
The Nivik Milknobs. The Nivik Milknobs.
As always, guys, not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Nivik Milknobs. Rutsch!